WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. This morning, I have a triple billing. I'm going to bookend Frontier Gentlemen with two episodes of Phil Cole. This is part of the private eyelashes that I encountered a couple weeks ago. As far as female private investigators in radio, kind of interesting. The first case, well, the first episode is episode 2. The original air date is the 5th of February, 1936. It stars Peggy Allenby.
Mysteries on the air. Your chance to play detective. Win huge cash prizes in this newest, most exciting, most fascinating mystery contest. Every week at this same time, over this station, your Philco radio tube dealer brings you transcribed the Great Philco Radio Mystery Contest. $50,000 in cash for the winners. $50,000 in cash for solving simple mysteries. Weekly prizes. Big, grand prizes. Nothing to buy. Anybody can enter. You may win this contest of skill. The big free Philco mystery book tells you all about it. If you haven't already got yours from your Philco radio tube dealer, get your copy as soon as possible. Lists all the prizes, shows you how easily you can win. Contains official entry blanks. You cannot enter this contest without this free book. So get your copy now. Here's Philco radio mystery number 2. If you already have your Philco mystery book, be sure it's open to pages 6 and 7 while you listen to the program. Listen carefully. Take notes. Follow the action on the diagram you'll find on page 6. Philco, the beautiful girl detective, is going to solve a mystery. And maybe you will win a big cash prize for showing how she solves it. You're a detective. You're on a case. It's the missing masterpiece. It is 9 o'clock in the morning, and the National Museum of Art has just opened its doors for the day. Old Dennis Maloney, one of the trusted guards, is coming on duty at his regular station, the Gallery of Valuable Dutch Paintings. Just as he is entering the Dutch room, Dennis is greeted by the director of the museum, Dr. Benson, who has been making his early rounds.
Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning to you, Dr. Benson.
You're looking healthy and happy as usual.
As for me, health centers, only me 2 feet that bother me at all. 25 years of walking around guarding oil paintings have flattened them out like 2 sheets of tin roofing.
Oh, that's too bad. I'll see to it that you get more rest periods during the day.
Thank you, Dr. Yeah. Benson.
You know, I always enjoy coming into this room. Those old Dutchmen certainly knew how to paint.
Oh, indeed. And hello. What's this?
Well, what do you mean?
Why, look here, sir. This little table in front of the benches. Why, there's a crack in the glass top.
Oh, somebody must have dropped something on it.
Maybe so, but that glass wasn't cracked when I went off duty last night at 5. Say, I'll bet it was that goofy artist, Mr. Young, that done it.
Young? Was he here when you left last night?
Yes, sir. He had a permit to paint in here until 6 o'clock. And when I left, he was sitting on this bench making another copy of this little Vermeer. Heaven help us.
Well, what is it, Dennis?
Well, look, this Vermeer. There's something different about it.
Well, you're right. This is only a copy.
Oh, the real one was here last night when I left.
That Vermeer cost the museum $200,000.
Oh, it was that artist, Father Young. Remember, I said he was here last night?
Yes, yes. And you say he was copying the Vermeer?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. He always does. He's made more than one copy, too, during the past year. Maybe this is one of them. Mm.
Has any other artist made a copy lately?
No, sir. No, sir. Not in the last 5 years. Shall I go into the hall and phone the police?
No, wait, Dennis. I'll do the phoning myself. We can't accuse Mr. Young hastily. We won't call the police, though, just yet. I'll get a friend who'll work quietly.
Yes. Here's the phone, sir.
Oh, thanks. Dennis, have you ever heard of Phil Cole?
Cole? Oh, wasn't there a Detective Cole some years ago?
That's the one. He was famous the world over for his work in crime detection. Phyllis is his daughter. Since his death, Phil has been carrying on her father's work. Hello? Is this Phyllis Cole? Hello, Phil. This is Dr. Benson at the museum. Someone has stolen our Vermeer. Yes, the woman baking bread. Can you come now? Splendid. Goodbye.
Dr. Benson, I've taken the liberty of bringing my friend Tom Taylor with me. You see, Tom writes mystery novels. The boy's pretty good, too. I'm afraid he uses me as a bloodhound to sniff out plots.
Why, Phil, darling, I pursue you because you're a charming woman, as well as an efficient plothound.
Oh, that's enough, Tom. I'm here on business. Now, Dr. Benson, please tell me everything.
Well, I entered this room an hour ago with Dennis Maloney here. He's been guarding our Dutch masterpieces for years.
Indeed, and I have, Miss Cole.
The first thing we noticed was a crack in the glass top of this small table.
I see. Go on, please.
What are you going to do with that magnifying glass, Phil?
Well, I'm going to examine the crack in the glass top. Go right on, Dr. Benson. I'm listening.
Well, then we discovered that our Vermeer was gone, and in its place, only a poor copy.
Oh, Dr. Benson, I found something interesting in this cracked tabletop.
Yes, Phil?
Now, Dr. Benson, the Vermeer was a small canvas, and that's why you hung it fairly low, about 7 feet, I'd say.
That's right.
The person who took it from the wall pulled this little table over and stood on it. That's what cracked the glass. I found some grains of sand wedged into the crack in the glass. Whoever stood on this table had been walking through sand not long before.
That sounds like an excellent clue.
Tell me this. Was anyone in this room after Dennis went off duty last evening?
Yes. There was a rather shabby artist who frequently comes in to copy our Vermeer. His name is Nelson Young. The museum closes to the public at 5, but Young had one of our special permits to stay till 6.
Do you suppose this copy is the one that he made?
Well, I can't say.
Dennis, are you certain this artist, Mr. Young, was here after 5 last evening?
Yes, ma'am, he was. I examined his late permit, and when I went out, I left him sitting there on the stationary bench, painting away with his long, gangly legs doubled up under himself like a pretzel.
Who checks up on the late permits when people leave the museum after the regular closing hour, Dr. Benson?
Well, the night watchman at the side door.
Well, could an artist with a large portfolio easily walk right out with the picture?
Yes.
Well, who in addition to this chap Young had late permits yesterday?
Well, there were two others. I picked their permits up at the office while I was waiting for you to arrive. Here, their names are on them.
Oh, thank you. Marcia Bedell. Who's she, Dr. Benson?
She's the daughter of old Amos Bedell, the retired banker. She's about 19, only child. And as in most cases of that kind, her father's a bit too indulgent. She's a spoiled young lady. And if I were her father, I'd turn her across my knee. And that shouldn't be difficult either, because she's a tiny little thing.
This other permit is signed by Richard Duncan. What sort of a chap is he?
Well, he's a very fine portrait painter. Has a mania for collecting, too. Now, I hesitate to say this, but I believe Duncan would mortgage his soul to gain possession of a fine painting.
Duncan sounds like an all-round good fellow.
He's just the kind of a chap most men instinctively dislike.
You mean he has a way with the ladies?
Exactly. He's the lean, dark type. Always looks well in evening clothes. Tall, good-looking.
Well, Dr. Benson, I think we'd better get those three over here immediately. Nelson Young, Marcia Bedell, and Richard Duncan. An interesting trio. I think we may find them very enlightening. Please don't be so impatient, Mr. Duncan. We'll be finished here as soon as possible.
But, Miss Cole, I tell you I left an important client to answer this insulting summons.
And I had to give up an appointment with my hairdresser.
Don't worry, Miss Bedell. Your hair looks lovely.
Well, maybe it does, but I got it full of salt water yesterday at the beach, and it feels very uncomfortable. You know what sand and salt water do to a girl's hair? Or don't you remember?
Yes, I think I do. Now, I'll be as speedy as I can. Well, Mr. Young, you've had sufficient time to examine that copy of the Vermeer. Is it one of yours?
Yes. Yes, it is one of mine. I recognize my own work, of course. But the Vermeer, I can't realize that it's gone. It was so beautiful.
If only Vermeer himself could have heard you saying that, it would have made him so happy.
Oh, you needn't sneer, Duncan. After all, you bought one of my copies.
Is that true, Mr. Duncan?
Yes, I did buy one of his awkward daubs.
Daubs? How can you talk like that? Just because you waste your time painting the vacant faces of the rich, you think you can
shut
talk...
Shut your mouth.
Now, be quiet, you two, please.
Yes, for goodness sake, stop
please,
fighting.
Please, everyone. Miss Coe is doing her best.
I apologize, Dr. Benson. Proceed, Miss Coe.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan. You've admitted that you purchased a copy of the stolen Vermeer from Mr. Young, yet you called it a daub. If you thought that, why did you buy it?
He continually whined about his lack of money. So I finally gave him $100 and took the copy so that I could have some peace while working here.
Mr. Young, have you sold any other copies?
Yes. Marsha Bedell bought one, too. She praised my work.
Poor fool. I only bought it for the same reason Mr. Duncan bought his. I pitied you.
I see. It was all just charity.
Mr. Young, how many copies of the Vermeer have you made?
Only three. Mr. Duncan's, Miss Bedell's, and one which I've kept myself.
Can you identify this copy left here on the wall by the thief?
No, I'm sorry, but I can't. All three copies were practically identical.
Come, Miss Coe. We're wasting valuable time. Surely you've discovered some clues. What are they?
Well, the person who took the painting from the wall stood on this table, cracking the glass top. The person also obliged us by leaving a few grains of sand in the crack.
Is that all?
Yes, that's all.
But aren't there any fingerprints or anything like that? There always are.
Unfortunately, Miss Bedell, the fingerprints we're looking for are probably on the stone of the mirror. Now, Mr. Duncan.
Well?
Where is the copy that you bought from Mr. Young?
I sent it to an acquaintance of mine in Amsterdam. A Dutchman with very little artistic perception.
And where is your copy, Miss Bedell?
I gave mine away last Christmas.
To whom?
My sister. She lives in Buenos Aires.
I see. Now, Mr. Young, where is the copy which you kept for yourself?
I put it in storage with my furniture.
Now, I have here the permits which the three of you turned in last night. Mr. Young left the museum at 5:35. Marsha Bedell went out at 5:50. And Mr. Duncan left exactly at 6. Are those times correct?
Yes.
Mr. Young, where were you working between 5 o'clock and the time you left?
I was in this room, of course, studying a beautiful Vermeer. I was here all afternoon.
And you, Miss Bedell, were you in the museum all afternoon, too?
Oh, no. I didn't feel very well yesterday, so I stayed in bed at home until about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Then I got up and had lunch, wrote some letters, and came here in a taxi. I got here about 4 and spent the whole time in the room across the hall, sketching some Rodin figures. There, you have my entire day.
Thank you. Mr. Duncan, you were the last to leave here.
How dramatic. I suppose you want an account of my actions?
If you please.
I worked at my studio until noon. After luncheon, I came here to the museum and spent the balance of the time studying the Matisse in the French gallery. Voila. Doubtless you will now proceed to turn me over to the police.
No, Mr. Duncan. For today at least, the police will not be interested in you. My job is finished. It's quite obvious who took the Vermeer from this room.
Who, Miss Cole? Who is the thief?
Perhaps Miss Marsha Bedell can explain her motive more clearly than I can.
Marsha Bedell?
Well, Miss Bedell?
Yes. Yes, I took it. But I still have it. I'll bring it back. I swear I will. Only don't have me arrested. It would kill my father. I only took it to save him. He's lost everything. He needed money so desperately. Give me a chance to help bring it back. Please bring me a chance. Give me a chance.
Well, you never can tell. That Bedell girl might have got away with it, too, if it hadn't been for Phil Coe, the famous girl detective. You have just heard Phil Coe discover who stole the missing masterpiece. How do you suppose she found the guilty person? That should be easy for you. You heard what happened. You know everything Phil knew. Why did Phil suspect Marsha Bedell? Can you give three reasons for her suspicion? Sure you can. Then write down those three reasons just as well as you know how, and enter the Phil Coe Radio Mystery Contest. $50,000 in cash prizes for the winners, over 2,000 weekly prizes, and 51 mammoth grand prizes. All the details are fully explained in the Phil Coe Mystery Book, which your Phil Coe Radio Tube dealer will give you free. Be sure you get your copy of this book. It contains the official entry blanks. You cannot enter this great contest without this free book. Besides, it will help you win. It's filled with diagrams, explanations, and all the rules and details. Follow carefully all the contest rules as they are explained in the Phil Coe book. It should be easy for you to answer the contest question. Maybe your skill will make you a winner. Listen every week at this time over this station to Phil Coe Radio Mysteries. Don't miss a single program. Ask your Phil Coe Radio Tube dealer for any other contest information you want. While you're there, too, better have him check up on your radio tubes. $50,000 in cash. That's a lot of money. Next week, you have another opportunity to win your share of it. Phil Coe, the girl detective, is going to solve the mystery of the death ray tube. Listen and see how good a detective you are.
Phil Coe, stands for Phyllis Coe. It's a play on words by their sponsor, Philco Radio Tubes and Radio Equipment. I'm pretty certain nobody has the follow-along book. And here in the 5th of September, 2018, the mystery of the death ray tube is going to be featured after Frontier Gentleman, which is going to be coming up right after this.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody...
Sorry about that. I queued up the wrong channel. But for the middle part of our triple billing, I have an Anthony Ellis's Frontier Gentleman, starring John Daner. This one's titled A Lost Mine. It was episode 5. The original air date was the 2nd of March, 1958. You're listening to Arthur. This is the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, and or WMFO.org.
There's a fever in the mining country of Montana Territory. It's known as gold colic. Once a man catches it, it can only mean one thing: life or death.
Frontier Gentlemen. An Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
Benton and Missouri in Montana Territory is what you might call a clearinghouse for supplies. They are shipped by riverboat up the Missouri, food, clothing, guns, ammunition, whiskey, tobacco, and from Fort Benton on to the west and north by pack train and wagon. The post is also the point of debarkation for the tenderfoot, the inexperienced miner seeking the fabulous gold fields of the territories. It seemed a worthwhile spot to find a story for the London Times, and so on my arrival, I went to the office of the local newspaper, the Fort Benton Dispatch. The editor was an affable chap by the name of John Warren. He took me into his tiny office.
London Times, eh? Sit down, Mr. Kendall.
Thank you.
Well, this must seem kind of like a tin horn paper to you.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Warren. As a matter of fact, I rather envy you. My work depends entirely upon whether the editor likes my story or not. If he doesn't, I don't get paid. If he does, well, I'm in luck.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope I can put you onto something good.
That's very kind of you.
Of course, the best thing you could do is to talk to some of the old-timers around. They've got 100 stories.
Well, first I wondered, has there been much gold found in this vicinity?
Around Benton? No, most of it's north and southwest of here. Big strikes over to Virginia City and Bannock. Mind you, there's talk, or you hear it around once in a while, of gold in these parts. But I never heard of anyone striking it rich. Most of the boys just pick up supplies here and try to get a grubstake to head on out to the mountains.
I see. Well, didn't you ever try prospecting?
Nope. Found a good wife, a pleasant way to live. I make out and I'm happy. Too many hill rats wasting their...
The hill rats?
Prospectors. Too many of them wasting their lives for that one big chance. I guess I'm not that much of a gambler.
Where would I be likely to find a chap like that, a hill rat?
Oh, Benton's full of them. If you want a real old-timer, go down and see Shorthorn Tom.
Shorthorn Tom?
Yeah. Nobody knows his real name, and he's probably forgotten it himself. You'll find him down at the shack's end of the street here. Turn left. His place is the first one on the left.
Good, I'll call on him.
And look, don't let him talk you into grubstaking him. He's got a lot of crazy ideas about finding a lost mine. He's been at it for 6 years, they say.
Well, I'll be careful.
Say, Mr. Kendall, why don't you join me and the missus for dinner tonight? You'd sure be welcome.
Well, that's very kind of you, Mr. Warren.
Well, it's not every day we get to meet a traveled man like yourself. I'll see you later, Mr. Kendall.
It wasn't hard to find Shorthorn Tom's place. I could have discovered it on a foggy London night by the smell alone. A ramshackle lean-to affair, it had the odor best described as rotting fermented cabbage, which a moment later I found emanated from the gentleman himself. The old prospector was the most unwashed individual I've ever come across in my life. Bleary-eyed, he greeted me at the sacking that passed for a door. Shorthorn Tom? I wonder if I could have a few words with you.
What's the matter, boy? You got the heaves?
No, I don't believe so.
Sound like it. You want words? Come on in. Got me a mess of poop stewing. Light and rest your saddle, mister. What's your business?
Well, I'm writing about the territory for a newspaper, Tom. I thought possibly you might be able to give me some information.
Information? What kind of information?
Oh, the life of a miner, for example. Your life. No, I'm quite serious.
You want to pay for information?
Oh. Well, I hadn't exactly planned on it.
Then I ain't got no medicine for you.
$5?
Yeah, I'd see it. Ain't you got no real money? Never did trust a bit of paper.
I'm afraid that's it.
Well, better than a sack of dingbats, I guess. Want some pooch?
Is that what you're cooking?
Yeah, tomatoes, sugar, and bread. Lost my teeth a couple of weeks back. Can't eat nothing but.
I don't think so. Thanks very much.
Well, you go ahead and ask what you want. I'll eat.
Understand you've been mining in this country for some time.
Oh, 20 here, more other places. Got the biggest strike a man ever sees 6 years back. But I lost it.
Really? Well, I'd like to hear about that.
No more than 20 miles from here, too. Except nobody believes it.
But I heard there wasn't any gold to speak of here.
You heard. Listen, mister. Oh, them's that tell you that don't know their saddle from a prairie dog hole. I'm not telling you. There's diggings over in them mountains, the Highwood. I seen them. I know what's there. Gold. 5,000 a ton of it's worth, I say.
What happened to it?
Well, me and a partner was prospecting in the Highwood. Got lost and caught in a blizzard. Sam. Sam, he was my partner. And he went west. Wind blew him clean off the trail, about 1,000 feet down. Well, I found a cave, see? I figured to stay put till the weather broke. And that's where I found it.
In the cave?
Right in the cave. Indian or Spanish diggings, I figure. Nuggets as big as your saddle.
Well, go on.
Well, that's all. I brought the nuggets back. Had me some fun. Then went back to work the mine. And I couldn't find it.
It's unbelievable.
Sure, that's what they all say. Shorthorn Tom, biggest liar in Montana Territory. Ain't nobody gonna give old Tom a grubstake to make them all look sick as a mule.
But they must have known about the nuggets you found.
Mister, a fellow who's in it rich is like to give away more than I took out of that cave. Oh, that's how they figure I got the gold. It was given to me.
It's quite a story.
Yes, ain't it? Now I'm between a rock and a hard place. Doing a job here and around to scrape up a dollar for grub. While up there, there's enough gold to buy me the whole dang town.
When did you give up looking for it?
When? Mister, when you got gold colic like I got it, you just never give up. You sure you want to have some of this pooch? Mighty tasty.
No, thank you.
Yes, sir. Yeah. 8 times I've been back looking till I run out of grub. But one of these days... Hey, you wouldn't be interested in going partners, would you?
Oh, I don't think so. It's very kind of you to offer.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Let me show you something. You know what gold looks like?
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Good Lord. That must be worth...
200, 250.
Well, but couldn't you use this to buy what you need for another try?
Could, but won't. If I spent this and didn't find the mine, there'd be nothing left to prove what I know. Well, it wouldn't cost more than $100. Man could take one mule for packing. Pretty good outfit. Oh, I ain't saying the best, but it'd do. Only on 20 miles from here.
And how about $50?
No, $100. And you know what? I got a feeling. If a man wanted to put up $100, this could be the lucky time. Oh, I've been feeling it for a week. The weather's good. This trip out, I'd find it.
Well, Tom, I have an idea. For nothing else but the experience, it'd be worth it. All right. Here. 50, 70, and 90, 100. Now, if you don't find it, I'll be in your shoes. Flat, busted.
Oh, mister. Hey, what's your name?
Kendall.
Well, Kendall, you got yourself a partner. Yes, sir, I'll take this here money and get us fixed up. We can leave right away. Bed out tonight. Where are you staying?
No, I've got a room at the American Hotel.
Meet you there in 2 hours.
Tom, there's nothing personal, you understand, but I think a little security is indicated in case of accidents.
Oh, you figuring me to deal from the bottom? All right, I'll tell you what. Now, I'll give you the nugget, see? You trust me with your 100, I trust you with my nugget. And if I don't show up in 2 hours ready to travel, you made yourself a prophet.
Fair enough.
Mister, you may not know it, but you're going to be one of the richest men in Montana.
Or the poorest. I'll meet you at the hotel.
In a moment, we return to Frontier Gentlemen. When you hear CBS News, you're hearing the results of worldwide watchfulness that pays off in accurate reporting sped to your sets with minimum delay. CBS News has reporters in every corner of the world. By keeping your set tuned to CBS Radio, you not only get your favorite entertainment, but the regular news programs of the nation's best reporters, plus special bulletins whenever they are called for by CBS News. Make the Star's address your listening post on the nation's most listened to programs and for the nation's most listened to news reports as well. And now we return you to Anthony Ellis' production of Frontier Gentlemen.
I had left Shorthorn Tom at a general store to buy supplies. Precisely 2 hours later, the old prospector was outside my hotel, leading a scrawny-looking burro, which looked as though it would momentarily collapse under the weight of its pack. It seemed that we were ready, except for one thing. Shorthorn Tom was blind, roaring, drunk.
Here they are, fighters! I'm all set and raring to go. I had me a little scamper juice to kind of start things off right.
Here's your nugget, Tom.
Oh, you're an honest man, Kendall. Come on, let's get going.
Well, if it ain't my old pal, Shorthorn Tom.
Who? Kendall, you see this suck-egg dog calls himself Willie Sanders. Where's no good son of a gun claim jumper, this or any other side of the Rockies.
See, you got yourself a grubstake, Tom. This fella you playing for sucker?
Sucker? You see this nugget, you river sniper? We're gonna get more like it. You've been laughing at me and my gold in the Highwood Mountains, huh? Well, yeah, we'll see who's the sucker. No good varmint, I got a good mind.
Tom! Tom.
Ain't no good trying to rouse him, mister. He does it every time. You bet he poured a whole bottle of whiskey in him. Gets stiffer than a board. He'll be like that for hours.
Give me a hand with him, will you? I'll take him up to my room.
They won't let that old buzzard in the hotel.
I think they will. Come on. I had the boy take the burro to the stable. Then together, Sanders and I carried old Tom into the hotel, up to my room, and put him down on the bed. He was snoring quite peacefully. My companion, Saunders, was not of the nicest type. Thick black brows growing in an almost straight line across his eyes, and a cast in one eye which gave him an even more villainous appearance. As I put Tom's nugget in my pocket, I saw him give it a sidelong glance.
You believe that story of his?
I have no doubt of it at all.
Nobody else in Benton does.
Well, that may well be their misfortune.
Did he tell you where the mine is?
He gave me a rough idea. Now, thanks very much for your help.
You grub-staked him, huh?
I grub-staked him. Good afternoon, Mr. Sanders.
You really think there's a mine?
My dear fellow, I can't see what earthly concern it is of yours, but yes, I think there is a mine.
How about taking a couple more partners on, me and a pal of mine?
Not interested, thank you.
He find that nugget up there?
You heard him. Goodbye, Mr. Saunders. Tom. Tom. Two hours later, he was still asleep. I locked him in the room and went downstairs for dinner. The bill came to $6, leaving me with exactly two in my pocket and a growing doubt as to the wisdom of my investment. I was just about to get up to leave the table when I heard a voice behind me.
Hi there, handsome. Yes, you.
Good evening.
Mind if I join you?
Why, no, not at all. Won't you sit down?
I've been watching you from over there. You know what I said to myself? I said, there's a real lonesome man. A real lonesome man. So I come over to make you feel better.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm in quite high spirits, really.
That's swell. That's real swell. I'm glad. My, you got a beautiful way of talking.
Thank you.
You're good looking, too. Nice and tall. And good looking.
Very kind of you.
You know what I bet?
I haven't the remotest idea.
I bet you're from the East and you're going to look for gold. And I bet you find it. What do you think of that?
Extraordinary.
I'm Alice. What's your name?
J.B. Kendall.
J.B.? What does that mean?
Oh, just initials, you know, J.B. Everybody calls me J.B.
I like that. It's strong. J.B. Would you like to go someplace quieter to talk, J.B.?
Not particularly. You see, I have a friend upstairs in my room.
Oh?
No. You don't understand. Gentlemen, not feeling too well.
I am sorry. Then if you like, we could go to my place.
Charming thought, but not tonight.
You don't like me.
Well, the contrary, I find you irresistible, but I must say I question your motives.
Hmm?
Run along, dear. Your friend, Mr. Sanders, is much too interested in our conversation.
Sanders? Who's he?
The gentleman behind the pillar, see? I saw you come in with him before. Would you be good enough to give him a message? Just say, no partners. Good night. Shorthorn Tom didn't awaken till the next morning, and I marveled at his recuperative powers. He showed not the slightest effects of the night before. We collected our burrow and left Fort Benton at sunrise and started south toward the Highwood Mountains. Two days later, we were in the heart of the mountains. Tom was in excellent spirits. He seemed to know exactly where he was going.
You see that gulch, bro? I swear I got sight of it before that doggone blizzard closed in 6 years back. Yes, sir, we're on the right trail this time.
Do you mind stopping for a moment?
Sure.
I thought I heard something.
Oh, man gets that way in the mountains. Hear a lot of things ain't really there.
No. It sounded like horses.
Oh, just echo the old burrow, that's all.
What's your real name, Tom?
Oh, I ain't had none except Shorthorn Tom for so long I near forget sometimes. When I was a sprout, I had me some folks called Weatherly. And it was a long time back, Kendall.
What about Shorthorn? Where did you find that name?
Never found it. It was given to me. That's what they called a tenderfoot down southways. And the name stuck. Hey, you got a handle except Kendall?
J.B.
J.B.?
Jeremy Bryan.
Jeremy Bryan. Oh, partner, I'm sorry. Mighty sorry. Man could get killed out here with a name like that. Trail's getting narrow yonder. You better watch your step. It's a long drop down.
How much further from here?
Oh, not much ways. It don't look like much, just a hole in the rock, but when you get inside, she opens up to a sizable cave. Look! Look, there she is! Come on!
Well, it looks like a cave all right, but you said the opening was small.
Oh, it's the one, I tell you. You see inside. Come on now. Watch your step.
I will.
Watch it.
Yes.
No, I can't exactly recollect whether it was on this side or the other. Can you see any sign of diggings?
No.
Oh, might have been a fall covered it up. Say, I'll use my pick here. You try where you are.
We stayed there, working, digging at the solid walls of that cave for over 3 hours. Tom must have known it was hopeless, but he wouldn't give up. Only shouted words of encouragement to me and dug into seams the harder with his pick. Then quite suddenly he stopped. I turned and saw him lying on the other side of the cave. Tom. Tom?
Oh, pain in my stuffings. Up to my chest. Ain't easy to breathe.
Oh, here. Here. Lie on your back. There we are.
Oh, that's better. I tell you, J.B., I tell you. Oh, it's a cold trail. I know that sometime back this ain't the place. Don't feel it. It just don't smell right. I was kidding myself. It ain't the place.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
No, I guess not. Not no more. Oh, here. You take this.
What for? I don't want the nugget.
I told you. It's worth 250, maybe. I won't need it now. I'm going up Salt River, partner.
If you mean you're going to die, nonsense.
Boy, one thing a man knows when he's old buzzard bait like me, he knows when it's time to die. But listen, you go on looking and see. Them diggings is around here somewhere. Maybe further along the trail. Maybe there's another cave along a bit.
No, Tom. Tom, lie back.
No, out of my way.
Tom.
I'm going to find
Tom.
Just along the trail.
Tom!
That old Tom, he sure had the gold colic bad, didn't he?
He dead, Sanders?
Sure he's dead. Don't you figure, mister?
Yes.
We and my partner here, we come up to see how you was doing. Didn't find the mine, huh?
No, we didn't find it.
Well, there's still the nugget. I seen him give it to you. Hand it over, huh?
Gentlemen, I feel rather sad about Tom's passing. Be good chaps and let well enough alone.
You kidding with that talk?
Oh, he's a dude. He can't help the way he talks. You give us the nugget, huh?
Now, both of you, get up. Up. Now, each of you take a pick. Start digging. We'll bury him here. You give me any argument, I'll shoot you on the spot.
After Shorthorn Tom was buried, I took the horses belonging to Sanders and his friend and started back to Fort Benton. I had the idea the walk would do them good. After sending my story to the Times, I had a drink for old Tom, then packed to leave for Helena in Montana Territory.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Joe Kearns, Don Diamond, Virginia Gregg, and Herb Ellis. Music was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Stay tuned for the Ford Road Show, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. Join us again next week for another report from the Frontier Gentleman. John Wall speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
The original air date was the 2nd of March, 1958, starring John Denner as J.B. Kendall. With Matt in the Whirlpools coming up next, I haven't seen anything on the emails to indicate he's not. But I'm going to close out the show with another Philco episode, as you heard in the first quarter of the Grand Hour. This will be the mystery of the death ray tube. I hope everybody ran down to their Philco representative and picked up the booklet so they could follow along and solve the mystery. I think I'll play out the Ventress theme of the Green Hornet. I believe it's for the radio and not the television at the conclusion. This is the 5th of September, 2018. And you're listening to Arthur with the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM WMFO and or WMFO.org.
show Mysteries on the Air. The Mystery of the Death Ray Tube, a new kind of radio contest. Mystery, thrills, suspense. Your chance to play detective. Your opportunity to win a huge weekly prize. Maybe even a mammoth grand prize in this great $50,000 cash prize contest. Every week at this same time over this station, your Philco Radio Tube dealer presents transcribed Philco Radio Mysteries. Fascinating fun. $50,000 in cash for the winners. A contest of skill that you may win. Anybody can enter, nothing to buy. Read about all this in the big Philco Mystery Book, free at your Philco Radio Tube dealer store. You cannot win without this book. Get your copy. Contains official entry blanks, lists the prizes, tells you all the details, shows you all the rules. In a few seconds, Philco Radio Mystery Number 3 will begin. Have you got your Philco Mystery Book open to pages 8 and 9? Use the diagram on page 8 to help you as you listen. Take notes. Keep your ears open. Don't miss a word. Ready? Then listen. Philco, the beautiful girl detective, is going to solve a mystery. 126 people are going to win big cash prizes for telling how she solved it. Maybe you'll win. Here comes the mystery of the death ray tube. In the mountains of Colorado, Phyllis Coe and her admirer, Tom Taylor, are sitting on a rail fence in front of a large cabin, talking and enjoying the morning sun. Tom seems a bit perplexed.
Phil, it seems to me that a few words of explanation are in order.
I refuse to explain a thing till you point that gun the other way.
All right. But I'm at least going to pop it a few tin cans.
If you fire that gun and waken old Dr. Crawford, he'll have you boiled in oil.
The old doc is certainly a mystery, man. Come on, Phil, be a good girl and give me all the details, huh? Why are we out here, and what are old Dr. Crowfoot and his two assistants doing?
Well, Dr. Joseph Crowfoot and my father were great friends. Before Dad began devoting all his time to criminology, he and Dr. Crowfoot used to work together, experimenting with electricity. 3 days ago, I received a wire from the doctor asking me to fly out here. He said he'd concluded an experiment that he and Dad had often discussed, and he knew I'd be interested in hearing about it.
Well, that certainly doesn't clear it up very much. Hey, see that tin can over there by that wooden shed?
Oh, now, Tom, don't. Oh.
Ah, bullseye.
Now you've done it. Here comes Dr. Crawford. He looks like a thundercloud.
Good heavens, man. Put that pistol back in the holster.
I'm sorry, Doctor. I was just taking a pot shot at that tin can there by the shed.
Yes. And inside that shed lies the culmination of all my years of infinitely patient work.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Crawford.
Oh, I know, my dear, I know. Confound it. Just when I want to talk to you, here come those two crazy assistants of mine. Yes, Conrad, yes, Kent. What do you want?
Our laboratory assignment for the day, naturally.
Must I direct every step you take, Conrad? Start something of your own.
I already have, sir. New theory. Thank you for giving me a chance to get back to it.
Coming, Conrad?
Yes, I'm coming. You and your fool theory.
That fellow Conrad gets under my skin.
Phyllis, this is going to be the greatest day of my life.
Oh, how do you mean, Dr. Crawford?
Well, today, for the first time, my scientific development will be demonstrated before eyes other than my own. A representative of the United States government will be here.
Oh, it sounds very interesting, Doctor.
Interesting. My dear, what lies inside that wooden shed is so interesting that the greatest brain in the War Department is coming here to investigate. I received a telegram from Washington this morning. Major William Osborne is arriving by train this afternoon.
The Major Osborne?
Yes, the Major Osborne.
What is this development of yours, Doctor? A poison gas?
Poison gas, huh? Nothing quite so elementary. But late this afternoon, when Major Osborne arrives, you will know what is in that shed. Well, Major Osborne, are you ready?
Yes, Doctor, quite.
Now, come then. Let's all get over to the shed.
My dear Mr. Taylor, if you'd been cooped up in Washington as I've been for the past 5 years, you'd really appreciate this country.
Now, here we are. Just let me unfasten this lock. There we are. Now step inside, please.
Thank you. After you, Miss Coe.
Oh, thank you.
And now, my friend, what do you see?
Well, I see a guinea pig in a cage.
The only thing out of the ordinary, Doctor, is that odd-looking glass cylinder resting on a bed of cotton.
Out of the ordinary, you say? See, now, my friend, this is a death ray tube.
A death ray?
Doctor,
for years, men have been trying
to... Of course, Major, of course. But it remained for me, Joseph Crowfoot, to discover the secret.
Dr. Crowfoot, if that glass tube really does produce a death-dealing ray, your invention will be the most dangerous weapon in the world.
Exactly. There will be enough energy stored within my death ray machine to destroy the entire race of man.
Does the model function, Doctor? Have you put it to the test?
Oh, yes, on small animals. Of course, you must realize that this is only a working model of the death ray machine I hope to build. Still, it has power enough to kill a man. My friends,
the government, in whose hands my machine is placed, would be omnipotent.
Of course it would.
Dr. Crowfoot, assuming the efficiency of your invention, are you planning to turn it over to the United States government?
Yes.
Dr. Crowfoot, who else knows of your invention?
Well, my two assistants, of course.
Could they replace it?
They know nothing of its vast intricacies. They have merely helped me in general details of the construction. I am the only man living who can replace it.
May I have a look at the tube, Doctor?
Stay away from it. Don't touch it. Why, if it dropped only 2 feet, it would shatter and its energies be lost forever.
Is it simple to operate?
Yes, Major. You notice this platinum key at the base of the tube?
Yes, Doctor.
One turn of this key forms an electrical contact, releasing the lethal energy from the opposite end. One turn would snuff out life. The large machine, when completed, will be able to wipe out whole armies.
But, Doctor...
But for the present, we shall have to be content with this guinea pig. Now, don't worry, my dear. The ray is quick, deadly, and painless. Stand aside, please.
Stand here, Phil.
Ready now? I turn the platinum key.
Dr. Crowfoot, I congratulate you.
What will the government say to that, Major Osborne?
The answer is obvious, my dear sir. You have succeeded.
Now it's going dark. In the morning, we shall have a further demonstration. Come, everybody. It's time for dinner. You know, we go to bed early in the mountains.
The shed is burning. Hurry, Kent. Hurry, Conrad. The shed is
what
burning.
What time is it, Tom?
After midnight. Look out, darling. Don't stumble over that bush.
Follow me, Miss Coe. I'll pick the way for you.
Oh, I can see now, Major. The flames are pretty high.
Doctor, don't go in there. Don't. Conrad, he's gone in.
Come out, Doc. It's pretty hot in there.
Dr. Crowfoot, come out.
Here he comes. Oh, thank goodness.
Are you all right, Doctor? It's gone.
What?
My tube, it's gone.
Doctor, are you sure?
Yes. Here is the box of cotton, but my tube has disappeared. Someone has stolen my death ray.
Oh.
Look, the fire's died out suddenly.
Yes, yes. Do you think I've not installed protection? An automatic carbon dioxide extinguisher.
But my tube is gone. It's gone. Which of you has it? Who is the thief?
Just a moment, Doctor. I found something.
My tube? Quickly, is it my tube?
No, a rag soaked in kerosene.
Then this fire was set deliberately.
Yes. Apparently by someone who didn't know about your extinguisher.
Well, that could be any one of you. Nobody knew of that automatic system but myself. Who is the thief? Which one of you?
Now, please be calm, Doctor. Let's put this quietly. Come, everybody. I think we'd better all get back to the large cabin.
You want me, Miss Cole?
Yes, Mr. Kent. And you too, Mr. Conrad.
Don't worry, little lady. I'm tagging along.
Boy, I wish I'd had time to put on my slippers. Can't say I like this barefoot boy business.
Hurry up, Phyllis. Now, you're a detective. Find the thief.
I'll do my best, Dr. Crowfoot. But you must be calm.
Here's the cabin. Come on, get inside. Get inside, all of you. Come on. Don't anybody try to sneak away.
All right. Let's all gather right inside the door. Light that kerosene lamp, Mr. Kent.
Okay, Miss Cole.
Ouch! Oh, holy Moses.
What is it, Tom?
I stepped on something hot. What in the world? Hold that lamp over, will you? Now I see what it is. There you are, Major Osborne. It's your pipe.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Taylor. I probably dropped it in all that excitement.
Yes, and the ashes fell out. They're still glowing.
Well, come on. Who has my tube? Hand it over.
Oh, wait a moment, Doctor. Now, everyone in this room and everyone in the world would have a motive for stealing Dr. Crowfoot's glass tube. It means power. The person who opened that shed and took the tube started the fire as a blind. He hoped everything would be consumed so that we'd think the tube had also been destroyed.
Remarkable.
Oh, you shut up, Conrad. Go ahead, Phyllis.
Excuse me, Miss Coe, but I noticed that Mr. Taylor is suffering from his burned foot.
Yeah, that's right, Major Osborne. It hurts pretty much.
I have some ointment on the dresser in my room. Why don't you go in and use it?
Oh, thanks, I will. Give me a match, will you, Kent?
You won't need it, Taylor. I left the candle burning in there.
Oh, all right, Major, thanks. I'll be right back as soon as I put some stuff on my foot.
Come, Phyllis, hurry. Don't waste any more time.
All right, Doctor. Now, according to the French law, a man is guilty until proven innocent. I think that's the way we'd better proceed.
The French method works pretty well, too. I had occasion to study it in action last winter in Paris.
Oh. And now, Mr. Kent, where were you when the alarm was given?
Well, next door in my cabin. I was sound asleep.
You share the cabin with Mr. Kent, don't you, Mr. Conrad?
Yes, and I can assure you I was asleep, too.
And you, Major?
I was in a deep sleep. I'd had a long journey, you remember.
And you didn't awaken until Tom shouted?
That's correct. Somehow, in the pitch dark, I found my slippers and dressing gown and dashed for my room.
Oh, come now, this is all foolishness. We're not getting anywhere.
On the contrary, Dr. Crawford, I know who stole your tube.
You? Who is he?
This gentleman, who's also stolen the real Major Osmond's credentials.
Oh, what? The maid's say, are you sure?
Stay where you are, every one of you.
The tube, look, it's in his hand.
Yes, Doctor. It fits very nicely into the pocket of a dressing gown. Miss Cole, I congratulate you upon your cleverness. As a matter of fact, you are far too clever.
For heaven's sake, don't drop my tube.
No fear of that. I've traveled halfway around the world to obtain this weapon. It seems that my government had an interest in it also.
What are you going to do?
There is only one thing I can do, with all of you. To borrow the expression of Dr. Crawford, the ray will be quick, deadly, and painless.
You can't do this. It's my life's work. Here, give it to me.
Doctor, come back.
The doctor, you
see? It really works on larger game than guinea pigs. And now, let's make it short. Ladies first, as usual.
Tom!
Good shot, Taylor.
I'll say. I came back just in time.
Look, the platinum key is still in his right hand.
And the tube is smashed to bits.
Yeah, poor old Dr. Crowfoot. If only I'd come a minute sooner.
Oh, Tom, you know, somehow I'm glad you didn't.
It's a good thing Tom Taylor came in just then, I say. Major Osborne was an ugly customer. He fooled everybody but Phil Cole, the girl detective. Did he fool you? Why did Phil Cole suspect Major Osborne? You ought to be able to tell why. You heard everything that happened. Of course, you can give three reasons which enabled Phil to discover the guilty person. Enter the Phil Cole Radio Mystery Contest. $50,000 in cash prizes for the winners. Huge weekly prizes, gigantic grand prizes. You probably have learned all about it in your free Philco mystery book, which your Philco radio tube dealer gave you without any obligation. Read the list of prizes again. Read the rules again. Be sure to write your answer on the official contest blank contained in the book. Remember, you must use this official entry blank for your answer, and you can't get the official entry blank without the book. So get your free copy now. This is a contest of skill. Your skill may win for you. Names of the major winners in this week's contest will be broadcast as soon as possible on a following Philco Radio Mystery program. Listen for Philco Radio Mysteries every week at this same time over this same station. Listeners with Philco radio tubes in their sets are going to have an advantage. Did you stop to think of that? In this contest, you will need to get good reception so that you won't miss anything that is done or said. And the best reception is what you get with Philco radio tubes. Next week, another Philco radio mystery. Next week, Philco, the girl detective, is going to find the guilty person in the thrilling airplane drama, Murder in the Sky. Next week, another opportunity to win your share of $50,000 in cash prizes.